Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube.
10 in a row. Wow, what a ride. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, episode 115. I am the host of the show, Brad Berube, here each and every week to talk Flames hockey. And boy, it's fun talking Flames now. This is ridiculous. Is this team going to lose again? We roll off 10 in a row. Been a long, long time since that happened. And boy, does it feel good to be on a winning streak. How will it feel when we lose again? That it's going to happen soon here, and I ask myself that question all the time. Like, how am I going to react? How's the team going to react? How's the fan base going to react? Will the Cullen show finally get busy again so people can bitch? I don't know, man. I don't know. I love Daryl Sutter's take on it the other night in the presser when he says, I don't put much stock into 10 in a row unless it's in the playoffs. Well, I guess maybe I look at it a little bit more positive scale. I love 10 in a row in the regular season because it solidifies a spot or helps solidify a spot. A ways to go still, but man, he's right in the fact that really, does it matter in Calgary? Are we going to remember this next year if this team has bounced in the first round? Probably not. Saturday night we saw the return of Mark Giordano, and great to have him back in the arena, and we and all enjoyed watching him so much over the years, and such a great man in the community of Calgary, and yeah, I mean, we're wishing him the best. Rough way to end, with a little cross-check to Paxman. I don't really know what happened there, but I'm not reading much into that. I think Giordano is a competitor, and real competitors just, I mean, you get into the moment, you get into the game, and that's your opponent at the moment, and it's probably a different story once the skates come off and you shake hands after, right? You know, one thing I do want to stop right now is the rumors with Mark Giordano. I loved him. I hated to see him go, but we've made the step without Gio. This talk of him coming back, a trade deadline, I know it sounds like a storybook Ginla story that we never had, the storybook Fleury story that didn't work. You know what? Let's just let this lie. It's worked out. Let's call it good. We don't need that anymore. Monday was an interesting day at the Dome, as it was family day, and I hate day games. I do, but I get this one, and I'm all in favor of this one. I loved the, I don't know if you saw it on Sportsnet, the kids explain hockey feature. That one had me chuckling. I thought the national anthem by Charlie Kavalka, yeah, said it. Head athletic trainer for the Flames. His daughter was just flat out amazing on Canada. And Chris Snowstun was pretty entertaining on the PA. I thought he did a real good job, too. Today on the show, we're going to have, we're going to start the show off. We're going to recap the two games from last week. Usually it's been a lot more lately, but we just got two this week we're going to talk about. Then we're going to talk about Oliver Shillington. I couldn't be more happy with the year Oliver Shillington's having. A breakout year is everything we've asked for, but what's it going to cost the Flames next season? Then a friend of the show, Nate Thomas, joins the show. He's all over Flames Twitter every single night, and we've got a ton to catch up on as we wrap up with all kinds of different Flames talk, talking to Nate. Good to have him back, and then we're going to wrap the show with some Flames news from the Pacific, a preview of Thursday's game against the Vancouver Canucks. Got a big weekend of hockey. Canucks Wild? Yeah, we're going to like this one. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Flames Unfiltered. All right, some good games to recap this week. I thought, how do you have anything negative to say when the Flames are playing the way they are? It's so fun, this fan group, this team and the fans really deserve this run and that we're on, and let's enjoy every minute of it. But Saturday night, let's talk about the hockey night in Canada. The Seattle Kraken come to town. Mark Giordano's return to Calgary, and man, it's odd. I still have a hard time seeing him in a Seattle uniform. A game that was pretty hard fought. Calgary outshoots Seattle 37-23, gets away with a third period goal, wins the game 2-1. Markstrom gets the win. Grubauer with the loss. Game winning goal, Elias Lindholm. Big shocker. He has a goal and an assist. 18 minutes of ice time. Matthew Tkachuk backs it up with a goal and an assist. Grubauer had a really good night. Stopped 94.6% of the shots in a game that was boring in a way. But one of those games where it's like, okay, now we got to see Calgary win a different way. We've been putting up 5-6 a night, which is great. We love that. But now Saturday night, we got to see them beat the Kraken in a hard-fought, low-scoring, I don't want to say playoff because it didn't have that atmosphere, but a tight style. And it worked. The Flames were able to find a way to win. Again, on Monday, Winnipeg comes down for the day game. Another hard-fought, tight game, no points, no goals in the first period, 1-1 after two, and then Calgary gets a late goal from Elias Lindholm to go up 2-1 with like 48 seconds to go. Calgary goes up 2-1. Mangiapane adds it. I believe it was Mangiapane. Who was it on the empty netter? I can't even remember who the empty netter was. How do I not remember that? Anyways, I don't remember who it was. Doesn't matter, does it? We won 3-1. Markstrom with another win. Elias Lindholm, like I said, with a game-winning goal. John Monahan had a power play goal. He gets moved down to power play two. Puts a snipe in the second period and gets a goal. And Andrew Mangiapane adds an assist. So the game, or the, not the game winner, the empty netter was not Andrew Mangiapane. I don't know what I'm talking about. A hard-fought game. A game that was just another one. We found a way to win in a situation where we're not posting 4 or 5. I thought Markstrom was really good in this game. Very steady. Had to battle a lot. Winnipeg did a great job of getting traffic in front of him and making it a difficult night for Markstrom and Ned. And I thought he battled really good and stayed composed. He got a little freaked out once in a while, a little bit of stick slashing, but I don't mind that. And a real good night there. Good to see Monahan get one on. I believe it's been 12 since his last one. So good to see him get one in the net. And all systems go, man. It seemed like a really good night. Oh, I know who got the empty netter. Tyler Toffoli did, didn't he? Yeah. Good to see him. I think he's been okay. I think that line has been bolstered in its offensive chances since he got here. So doing everything we expected. But two more wins for the Flames. Let's see if we can keep it going this weekend. All right, time to talk Oliver Shillington. Now, this is a guy that was drafted by the Flames and then just never took off. Would go down to the American Hockey League, absolutely obliterate it, tear it up. Man, he's just too good for that league. But then he would come up to the league, and I always liked his offensive upside, and I liked his. But his decision making was just bad. It was just not good decision making. It was risky decision making. A lot of those pucks ended up in the back of our net, and it wasn't a healthy fit, I guess would be the thing. I thought he was gone. He was a guy, we picked him on waivers, you guys. A guy that I did not think would be back this year and re-sign, but did. A guy that just doesn't give up. And you know what, really, you got to look at the other side too. The organization didn't give up on him either. It was a two-way street there. He gets his shot this year, a shot that I was questioned if he was going to get, just the way preseason went. It didn't look like Shillington was going to get his chances. Was a seventh D-man in the first game, and then got his shot, and really, really, much like Ruziska did, the second or third shot for him, but really solidified it and took advantage of it and ran with it. He's offensively been very good in my mind. He looks so much more calm and composed. One of the things that I've really noticed with Shillington is that's been a real upside is when you're against an opponent like a Connor McDavid who's really fast, Shillington is the guy that can keep up with him. And he's done a number of times this year, he's done a really good job of being able to catch up to that fast guy, angle him off, get him to the boards quicker without having to take a penalty or create a scoring chance. I think he's done really well moving the puck out of the zone this year, comparatively speaking to his other years. Is there still a few risky maneuvers? But I think that's what you get with any offensive defenseman. I think there's a give and take there. But it's just not, risky like it was in years previous to this. So, you look at him, and now he's heading into a new contract where we need to get him signed as he's finishing up his $750,000 two-year deal, I believe it was, that he signed 2 years ago, and is a restricted free agent at the end of this year. Now, the Flames hold the cards because he is a restricted free agent, but he's going to definitely get a pay raise. And as much as I love some of the websites that project pay raises, Evolving Hockey does a great, great job, but they've got him projected at a market value of $8 million. I think that's absolutely ridiculous, but that's where he's tracking based off other players in the league. Now, Shillington is coming off seasons where in 2018 he played 38 games, had 8 points, 3 goals, 5 assists. In 2019 he played 48 games, 2 goals, 5 assists, 7 points. 2020-21 he played 8 games with 1 assist. Now, this year he's at 47 games, 6 goals, 18 assists, 27 points. A plus player. He's a plus 27. Did we ever see that coming? He's getting critical key ice time. He's getting between 17 and 20 minutes a night. His last 5 games are 20, 17, 18, 16, and 19. That's good time on the ice for a guy that was pretty much a cast-off in this league and a cast-off by the Flames. So, if Evolving Hockey has him projected at $8 million, and that was also published in The Athletic, and that's what their projections are. He's not getting that, and no team would pay him that because his proven track record is not there, and that's still worth something. But what is he really truly going to get? And I've fumbled around with some numbers and kind of did some comparisons, and I thought, he's kind of a TJ Brody comparison in a way. And TJ is getting, a little over 4.6 now, I think it is. Yeah, 4.65. He's kind of like a Rasmus Anderson for us. He's offensive. Rasmus is in at 4.55. That would probably be a really good comparison in a way. Devon Toews would probably be a comparison in Colorado at 4.1. So, Noah Hanifin might be a comparison at 4.9 in Calgary. It's funny how you get so many when you really sit down and take a look at it. So where do you actually think it's going to come out? And I look at it in the fact that he's unproven over a long period of time, which pulls his price down. His upside is there. The thing I really wonder what will happen if he wants to go long-term or if he wants to do a short bridge, bet on himself, and then shoot for that $7, $8 million price tag in a couple years. I think if he wants to go short-term and bet on himself, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that you can go over 5. I think the number that I'm looking at is more in that 4 to 4.5. I'd be comfortable with 4 or 5 years even. I would be. I don't think this guy's going to lose it. Now, if he's anything over 5, we're not going down that road. I don't see that happening. Do I think he's going to maintain this elevated play? I do. I think it's helping that he's playing where he's playing, but I don't see that changing. I have got no signs of that changing. Now, the benefit we're going to get to see here, if all still goes as planned, is the fact that we're going to get to see him in playoff action and get to measure him because he is a restricted free agent. We don't need to worry about locking him up, that we're going to get to measure his postseason and see how that plays into the negotiations in the offseason. I feel pretty comfortable with this one. I would like to see, you know, anywhere between 2 and 5 years at 4.5. I don't, honestly, to get all these guys signed, I don't know that we can go more than that. Maybe Treleaven can work some magic and get him in that $3 million range. I don't know. I mean, if he wants to do a one-year deal and walk to free agency, I don't want to go do that because that's going to cost a bunch of money. But we're going to see what happens here. And Oliver Shillington's been good this year, and he's been safe and solid, and I guess we'll see. But I see him in that $4 to $5 million range. Joining Flames Unfiltered now, he's a regular on the show. Nate Thomas joins us. You can catch him all over Flames Twitter, and you can also catch him covering the Anaheim Ducks on the Hockey Podcast Network. Nate, good, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on again, bud. It's always fun talking to you.
Well, we haven't talked Flames for probably a month and a half, I think. Probably maybe two months.
It's been a while, yeah.
And there's just so much that has happened since we last talked, and I thought, I was thinking the other night, I'm like, man, I got to get him on the show so that we can get his take on this. Because sometimes we both like have the same goal in mind, but sometimes we don't always see things exactly the same when it comes to the Flames. And that's a good thing, though, because then we can bounce ideas off each other. And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing, but a good thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get it started right away. What do you think? Okay, I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think you thought we would have the success that we're having. I did not see this coming. I thought we'd be okay, but I did not see this coming. What do you attribute, what are the biggest factors and the reasons why this team's having so much success?
Oh, man, there's a few things that you can point at. First, I definitely wasn't expecting this kind of season, this type of success again and that sort of thing. So I'm being cautiously optimistic about it. So because really, like, yeah, regular season stuff is great, but once you make the playoffs, it's everything is fair game, right? We've seen that for years.
And we have 30-plus games still.
Yeah, exactly. Man, Jacob Markstrom has been solid, as well as Dan Vladar. Take away those two back-to-backs that he had on that Eastern road trip that I was a little confused about, even that you gave him those. But, yeah, you got that. The defense has been solid. We were kind of talking a little bit off-air about it. I'll call it the improvement from the start of the season to the point we're at now with Erica Branson and Nikita Zadorov. Those were two guys that when they were first initially signed were not pieces that I was very confident in, and even more so maybe with the money it felt kind of strapping, but not that I think that they're still worth the same amount of money right now. Like Gabranson, you can't tell me Gabranson's worth $2 million, but they've definitely, as I was saying to you kind of before we started talking, you were noticing those two as the third pairing a lot at the start of the season, and it wasn't for any good reasons, unfortunately. And as the third pairing, you don't normally want to be noticed too often, I guess.
Right? I would agree with that.
You just want to do your job and kind of get out of there, and you know it goes a bit more to the stars, right, to the first two pairings. These guys have kind of gotten back to that point, at least, where you don't notice them really anymore in the best way possible. But when you have noticed them lately, has been in good situations, right? If whether it's, you know, Erica Branson scoring a goal, he had two back-to-back games, I think, of goals, something like that, which, yeah, who would have thought at the start of the season, right? Nikita Zadorov's, you know, laying out big hits, but it's not taking him out of the play or out of position anymore. That sort of thing, which is like that was a big thing that I had, not wanting him really at the start of the season. And then, you know, that top line especially, but the forwards altogether, that top line of Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Tkachuk, you can't tell me that's not the top line in the NHL right now. Like who else would be even close to that?
Right now I think they are. And I think most would agree with that.
The nice thing is that, like, front to back, this team has excelled. There were definitely some weak points, you know, the depth there. But you know what? I'll give Bradshaw Living some credit. He actually went and did some work mid-season and picked up Tyler Toffoli. He's got two goals so far, and I think three or four games that he's played with us. One being an empty net, but they don't ask how, just how many. The fact that you can, you know, put Tyler Toffoli down on like the third line, but you can interchange him with third or second, right? Shows that we do have a bit more depth now, even just by adding him. This team looks so much better, even just with the addition of him, just as a depth piece. Yeah, front to back, this team just has been solid this year, I think. You had that bit of a break, kind of like end of December, beginning of January type thing, but I think you can honestly attribute that to the team getting just hit hard by COVID. You kind of take that out of the way, and I mean, obviously you can. It's still in the standings, but you take that circumstance out of the way, and this team has just been flying the entire year.
And I think every team's going to have their moments, their ups and downs. And
absolutely.
In championship seasons with Tampa Bay, and they have their moments, you know. And I'm probably, and maybe you'll disagree, I mean, I don't think we'll keep this pace up, obviously, to through the end of the season. We're going to have a few bumps in the roads, and I don't know that's necessarily bad. I think you need that along the way to build more character and deal with adversity, because adversity is going to happen in the playoffs too. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this all plays out. Who do you think the biggest surprise has been this year?
Oh, biggest surprise. Now, I think if you're paying attention beforehand, it's maybe not as much of a surprise. But I think it's still a bit of a surprise of how much of an impact he has made on this team. Oliver Shillington on that back end there. That's kind of the surprise for me. But
How could we answer anything different?
Yeah, I like I said, just if you're paying any sort of attention to the game that he had, or just like, you know, before this season and whatnot, like he has a potential there. Just, you know, sometimes it is just finding that right fit with a player, or just a little bit more time, or a certain coach kind of to play under, that sort of thing, right? It feels like time is a blur to me at this point. It feels like forever ago since, you know, Jeff Ward was at the helm of this team.
Yeah,
but that was like a year ago.
Yeah.
Really, right?
Yeah, it was.
It makes sense that, yeah, you know, okay, we'll introduce the Sutter system full on, and there's a lot of players that, you know, do well under that kind of system. And Oliver Shillington has definitely been one, especially paired with Brandon Tanev there, right? Tanev's able to do a bit more of the defensive side. He can obviously put up the points if he needs to. But it allows Shillington to be that little bit more of an offensive defenseman that he wants to be, and it's a perfect pairing there.
You know, it's funny, and I was thinking about the biggest surprise, and I thought, I'm guessing Nate will say Shillington, but I'm thinking, well, Vladar's been a surprise.
That was my second, yeah.
Rasmus Anderson's play has been somewhat of a surprise. His rebounds have been somewhat of a surprise. Zadorov's been a surprise. Gabranson's been a surprise. I mean, Gaudreau's been a surprise. I mean, there's just, like, the list goes on and on and on. And that's one of the reasons why we're sitting in this situation that we are this year up. Would you consider there being anybody who's like a secret star on this team right now?
Secret star. As much as this guy's been shown around and everything like that, and is part of that top line, Elias Lindholm quietly put up points and just is not honestly getting the recognition from.
He didn't get any recognition. He didn't get any recognition until this week.
Exactly. The guy's on a. Well, I think he's on like
eight-game
goal streak right now, or point streak. I forget which one it is, but like I think he's one game away from breaking a franchise record for that now. Yeah, this guy's not getting the recognition he deserves, and as much as that sucks to see, right? You want to be like, hey, look at this guy that we have that nobody's paying attention to.
But it might be good.
It's also okay that nobody's paying attention to him, because then it surprises people.
Yeah.
It's the same as Andrew Mangiapane for the last couple of years, right?
Yep.
We know the guys from the In the Dome podcast, and they were having some fun with somebody on Twitter of, oh, you know, this guy, like the other person was saying, like, oh, nobody outside of Calgary knows who this is. He wouldn't be more than like a third line guy on any other team, and suddenly everyone's just going on this guy of like, hey, he's got the MVP at the World Championship. Hey, he's putting up so many like these points and stuff like that, to the point that the Flames social media themselves even caught in on it. Because the guy was, I think it was like, hey, let me know when he scores 20 goals or something like that, like thinking that he wouldn't do it. The Flames got in on it, tagged that person and said, hey, just to let you know, Mangiapane has 20 goals in 40 games or something like that. So
it's crazy that the success that, I mean, just across the rosters that everybody's having. Can you think of a frustration this year?
Maybe a little bit biased, just thinking as a bit of a goaltender, but, oh, man, how much Jacob Markstrom has played. We know Daryl Sutter's system, that he likes to ride a goalie as much as he can. You can look back to Mika Kiprusoff and that sort of thing. I wouldn't mind an extra start here and there for Dan Vladar.
I agree.
Oh, man, other frustrations. I'm not really sure, actually, at the moment. Would I mind a little bit more depth for scoring still? Sure, one more guy would definitely be pleasant, especially for a deep playoff run, right? Like, look at Tampa for the last couple of years. They had that the third line of, who was it? Gord, Coleman, and I can't remember who the third guy was on it. But, like, that line acted almost like a second or first line. So if we could have something similar, that would be great.
You know, I when I thought about frustrations, the only guy that I could think of was Dylan Dubé.
Okay.
That's the only guy. I expected a little bit more of a, I don't know, I kind of had him penciled at the beginning of the year to have a breakout year. I mean, not an Andrew Mangiapane breakout year, but, like, to take a step.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it yet. It's hard to be negative on anything on this team. It really is. So I'm somewhat nitpicking. But I just don't see the step that I guess I anticipated this year.
Yeah. Okay, if we want to go for one specific guy, I do have one for you. He's done a little bit better as of late, but it's still really rough. Plus minus is not normally a stat that I really look at unless it like seems very good or very bad. Sean Monahan is a minus 12. He's getting the points there now, right? 8 goals, yep. 14 assists, but this is not the Sean Monahan that Calgary Flames fans are used to watching.
No.
And we were hoping that he could maybe take another step back this season, and I just haven't really seen it.
No, and I haven't either. And I'm not going to sit here and defend Sean Monahan because that would be silly. But I'm almost to the point where I feel like, as a fan base, all of us, me included, have like kicked this guy to the Jankowski level. And I just don't know, like, I guess I've just, like, I've, like, shifted gears on my expectations. Because I thought you know what I mean by that? Like, I just got to the point where it's like, all right.
Yeah.
I used to think Sean Monahan was money in the slot every time, and now he's not. And now he can't sometimes get to the slot. So I guess I'm just going to have to live with it. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. It's just, it's realizing that, and it happens for a lot of players over the duration of their careers, that they become a bit of a different player than where they originally were drafted, or like what they were originally drafted for, or that sort of thing.
See, it's funny because everybody on Calgary Twitter always just goes off about what he's making. And is he overpaid? Absolutely.
Yeah, can't
but
say
you know
that.
What? Lucic is overpaid.
Lucic is overpaid thanks to the genius that is Peter Chiarelli. And I think
you're right.
A lot of people can attest making way more than they should to Peter Chiarelli.
But in reality, though, he is still overpaid. But we've given up on that now, and we don't worry about that anymore because he has different intangibles for this team.
Yeah.
Albeit he's still overpaid. But, it's one of those things. It is hard to find a negative on this team this year. You know, one thing you mentioned that, you know, has had me thinking a little bit this year is the amount we're playing Jacob Markstrom. Mm-hmm. Now, I get it, but I also look at Dan Vladar and I'm like, at the beginning of the year, I said, all right, if Dan Vladar can win 10 games for us, success.
Yep. And he's close to that. He's got 7 on the season so far.
Yeah.
9-11 save percentage, a 2.58 goals against. He's looking good.
He's tracking for, well, depending on how many starts he gets, but he's tracking for over 10. So I don't know how we can't look at this as a success. And last week, people were all worried and bent out of shape about him starting Vladar. And I'm just like, he hasn't been bad. what is everybody freaking out about? I was like, has he been bad and I'm not seeing this? He had a couple bad outings, but so did Jacob Markstrom, but we're not, waving the flag at him. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
That surprised me a little bit.
Dan Vladar has been, he is one of those surprises for me, and it's not anything against him or that. The guy just didn't really have a whole lot of experience in the NHL coming to Calgary. He played 5 games in Boston. He was 2-2-1 in that time, sorry. So you just really didn't know what to expect from him at an NHL level.
Yeah.
I did go to, I went to 2 preseason games. The first one I went to was against the Edmonton Oilers where Vladar started. And I was 5 rows from behind his net for 2 of the periods. So I got a good look at him right off the start. And I know it's preseason.
But you were impressed, weren't you? Because I remember talking to you after this and you were impressed, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. You take a look at that score, I think it was, 4-0 or 5-0 for Edmonton, but it's preseason, right? It's the first one, but he looked solid. He had, the great lateral movement and just was tracking the puck really well, I found, and which impressed me because it was, the start of preseason, right? Everyone's shaking off rust and that sort of thing, and, even though teams are, it's a lot more of an AHL roster than an NHL roster. Those are still guys that are, playing as hard as they can to make roster spots and that sort of thing. It's still high-level competition. This guy looked good. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really seen a bad game out of Vladar, honestly, this entire season. There was those 2 back-to-backs, but I don't necessarily attribute that to him. The team around him just wasn't doing hot either.
They weren't good.
You take a look at the schedule. That was during that Carolina, Tampa, and Florida 3 games in 4 nights. Which you could almost call that a scheduled loss, right? Against Carolina, yeah, exactly. So I don't really attribute anything of the negative to him on those games. I did pull up the Athletics player cards by Don LeCision there, and Vladar is on pace for 12 goals to stay at the save percentage he's at. He's looking at a 0.8 goal saved above expected, which that's good. That's what you want to see out of a backup goaltender. So
absolutely, I've been super impressed with him. We talked a little bit about the defense, and in that I know, and we talked about it on air preseason about our fear of where we were at with Zadorov and Gabranson, and really where we were going to go with our defense and. Do you, at this point in time right now, do you feel comfortable with our defense?
I do feel comfortable with our defense, and that's been that I haven't been able to say that for a few years, to be honest with you. So yeah, this defense just it looks solid to me. We have depth guys if we need them. That's not something that Brad has to go out and
we've got it.
You've got Michael Stone still ready to slot in.
Connor Mackey.
Connor Mackey. Yusuf Alamaki as well, who's just been tearing it up in the AHL, just ready to get his chance again. And I honestly don't think he really got a great chance up here in Calgary this season.
But I don't think he got a great long-term chance, but he didn't outplay the other guys that were veterans. So
yeah, he had a very short leash, I felt, for some reason, compared to someone like Nikita Zadorov, who, he's got the tenure and everything like that, but Zadorov at that time would make 5 mistakes a game, 2 of them would cost us goals, and Valimaki would make 1 mistake and just get benched.
Yeah. So. But you know what? I'm going to defend Sutter on this one.
Sure, go for it.
One of the things with Zadorov that he brings to the table that I like, and I think Sutter does too.
Wait. Can I just guess?
Yeah.
Is it size?
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But he brings that fear factor.
Okay.
And what I mean is, how many times, I'll give you an example. when we play Washington, I always worry about my players, any of somebody on the Flames getting hit by Wilson, even if I'll be a dirty or clean.
Yeah.
I worry about every time he's on the ice, it's like, oh gosh, don't catch him with his head down. You know, where I feel like Zadorov brings that aspect to other teams where they're like, oh, people know when he's on the ice. Just like they know when Lucic is on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And having a guy in the back end that this year has learned to control it and pick his moments.
Yeah.
Even makes him so much more of a force back there. And I can't believe I'm sitting here saying that Zadorov is a force. But I think
I don't think anybody thought we'd be saying that at the start of the season.
But I think you get what I mean, though, in the fact that, like, he brings an aspect that Valimaki can't. Now, will Valimaki probably be a bigger factor on this team 3 years from now? I honestly think so, and I know a lot of people don't. But I do think he is going to get his chance. And I don't know that it isn't this year because, you know, someone is going to get nicked eventually here.
Knock on wood, Brad.
I know, but you know, everybody's like, well, he just rolls out the same lineup every night. Yeah, we should probably all be very thankful that we're allowed to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't have the Jeff Ward line shuffle every single night, you know?
And God, that made me just want to bash my head through a wall every night. You didn't know what to expect. And that
freaking change every 2 minutes.
Yeah. You know my feelings on Ward. Oh. As soon as that was made public that they had, like, made him full-on head coach, like, I stopped my car and I was just like,
I think
no.
I think our feeling was mutual there. You know, one thing that's gotten a lot of talk in Calgary here over the last couple of weeks is, you know, Oliver Shillington went from pretty much a cast-off to a top-end defenseman. And as much as I'm happy about that, and I know you are too, and I know the organization is, and everybody, I can't help but look at the numbers and be like, geez, what are we going to have to write a check for this guy for next year?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And for that, I'm going to take a look here at the Athletic article.
You don't want to see what it says. You don't want to see the number.
Yeah, they're projecting him at $7.3 million.
Yeah, not a prayer. And, okay, they might project that. And I saw that too. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's only done this over a short span.
Yeah.
Albeit, I don't think he's going to change now.
I think he's got
the confidence. And he's got to figure it out. So, this is a guy you're probably going to want to get wrapped up for 5 years. Like, where do you see this contract coming out?
See, now 5 years would obviously be great, but I feel like both sides could be okay with a show-me contract, say like 2 years kind of thing. I don't know. You still got to reward the guy a little bit.
Sure. What are you thinking?
$3 million, 2 years?
Do you think he goes for that?
I think he could. It's your risk reward kind of thing, right? Like, yes, you're risking that you only have the contract for 2 years and it's a lower amount, but you're going for the reward of, hey, I'm going to show that I can continue to do this over the next 2 years, and then I'm going to really get my value plus a little bit more because hopefully the cap's going up and everything like that too. They'll be willing to pay me a little bit more.
So I think you'd agree with me, and I think a lot of Calgary Flames fans would agree with me that this management group kind of drug Shillington a little bit through the pile here the last couple of years, right? So if you're Brad Treliving and I'm Shillington's agent, and I said, I'll tell you what, Brad, we're going to go 5 years at 5.5. What do you tell me?
I would say 4.5 or 5, and you got a deal.
I'm just curious on what you say, because I put a lot of thought into it.
It's still a spread of $1 million, which, yes, that's a hell of a lot of money. But if we're in those positions at least, that's something you can work with.
I agree with you. It's an interesting thought process that I guarantee.
The projected 7.3, that's a little bit much just for one season. But if you can, you got to back up that contract. But 4.5 to 5. Mm-hmm. I'm good with that.
So Brad Treliving goes out and gets Tyler Toffoli. I was very, very, very pumped about this.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see this? What's your opinion? And how impactful will Tyler Toffoli be for the Calgary Flames?
I was very excited for it, and I think we've already kind of seen just a small glimpse into the impact that he's going to bring to this team, just having that offensive depth that we've been lacking for the last few years. It's not going to be just hopefully relying on the first line, especially, but the top two to score goals, right? We have scoring now over the last few games throughout the lineup, whether it's the third line with Toffoli, you know, you hope that playing with Toffoli brings Monahan back a little bit. Those two played in for the Ottawa 67s together in junior. And even down to that fourth line, right? Just you have guys that can score now, right? You've taken out the guys like Nick Ritchie, like Tyler Pitlick, right? Who weren't really contributing a whole lot to this team. You have a team or a forward group at least of contributors. In some form or another, obviously some guys have to contribute a little bit more than others, mm-hmm. but you have everybody contributing at this point.
Yeah.
So the small sample size that we've seen, it's very promising. Just the addition of Toffoli to what it does to the entire forward core.
And I don't think we've seen the best of Toffoli yet. I really don't.
Not yet. And I'm excited to see it.
My only fear on this whole thing was, and believe me, he was in my top two that I wanted. Just because I thought, number one, I thought term I loved. I thought the fit was good. I liked a lot about it. The only thing that I thought was, man, I just wish he had a little more speed.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I mean, geez, you can't have everything, can you?
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, everything else he makes up for, right?
He does. He's super smart. He's super responsible. He's gonna fit in well with this group. I think it's going to be a match made in heaven, and I pray that 12 months from now I'm not eating those words, because I really think that this can be really, really good.
Yeah, I know there were some people saying, oh, it feels like a bit of an overpayment and that sort of thing, which I can definitely see, but...
An overpayment, do you think so? I didn't at all.
But I don't.
I thought it was a freaking steal.
I think when you initially look at it, it might look like a bit of an overpayment because, you know, there's a few teams going in for Toffoli. You're going to overpay just a slight bit when there's more teams involved. However, I look at it this way. It's Tyler Pitlick and Prospect Heinonen.
And who cares?
For Toffoli. Because, yes, you have those picks. Yes, there's a first round from this year, but it's going to be closer to a second round than it is, you know, like a top end first or a middle of the way first. You got the fifth round pick, which, yeah, you get some guys in every now and then. But... You know, take a look. Cole Caulfield obviously is doing a lot better now, being under Martin St. Louis. It definitely helps to play under your idol growing up. But there's not too many guys I can really think of since Carey Price that the Montreal Canadiens have really developed into strong players that they themselves did completely on their own.
You know,
so when you look at that, you can maybe take aside the picks. And it's Tyler Pitlick and a prospect for Toffoli. I'm happy with that.
Me too.
I will take that every day.
And people always say, well, you gave up a first-round pick. And I always look them dead in the face and say, name the last first-round pick in Calgary that panned out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you got a point.
Gosh.
And I think Steve Dangle kind of explained draft picks the best. They're magic beans.
Yes.
You don't know what they're going to be until like 5 years after you made the pick.
And I know what kind of bean we just got, and he's a good one.
Yeah, exactly. And to have him with term as well at, what, 4.25?
Yeah, I think it's right. Yeah, 4.2. I'm happy
with that. Oh, I'm happy with that.
Is Brad Treliving done making moves?
I hope not. Like I said, I think we can go for one more scoring piece.
What do you want? What do you want? Tell me who you want.
Oh, man.
I'm putting you on the spot. That's all right, though.
I mean, a Jack Eichel would have been nice.
I don't. See, I am not on that train.
No, you weren't on that train?
No, too much money.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that definitely would have been like a salary retained kind of thing if possible. And I even felt that Buffalo kind of shot themselves in the foot with some of the demands that they were making.
Mm-hmm.
it's not that they didn't get a good return, but that's not the return you would think for Jack Eichel.
It's tough, though, to get a return, though, when it's that much money and that much uncertainty. Do I think he's going to come back healthy? Yeah, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah,
but
it'll be good.
I look
and it's also hard, I think, when you start to have the reputation that Buffalo is having medically, because this isn't the first time that they've done something similar to this. Robin Leonard was very vocal about it after the fact as well, that early on in his tenure that he had broke his foot. I think he was supposed to be off it for, I'm trying to remember this, so don't take my word for it. I think it was like he was supposed to be off of his foot for a month, and after the first week, they put him on a leg press, and he broke it again, like as he was rehabbing it. So he's like, this isn't unusual for the Buffalo Sabres, unfortunately.
Yeah, the thing is, though, like I always look at that, and I don't know why I remember this, but when this whole Eichel deal was going down, I remember one day I was out mowing my yard, and I had my headset in, and I was listening to Hockey Talk, and all I could think of, and I was doing the numbers in my head, and I was thinking, okay, if we get Eichel, there's no way we can sign Tkachuk and Gaudreau.
No, you were losing one of them.
For sure.
Yeah.
And probably losing a Mahjupani along the way, too.
Potentially.
And I'm like, man, I don't know if I can do that.
Maybe instead of a Mahjupani, I think I was leaning towards more of a Dubé.
Dubé's like $2 million, though. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
To make cap work, I see what you mean. But, like, in terms of a player that Buffalo would have went for...
I meant just sheer, like, even if we could...
Just dollar-wise.
If we could have retained all of them, we couldn't have assigned them all. So,
yeah,
you know, it would have strapped us so bad. But I got one move, and I want to throw it out to you and see if you think I'm crazy. I look at our roster, and I wouldn't obviously do nothing with goaltending. I wouldn't do anything with defense. I think we have Stone and Valimaki and Mackey. We already built our defense. We're good.
Yeah.
I would want to add one more winger. And okay. I got one guy that I've been watching, and I'm just praying that I open up the Facebook or Twitter and see this name traded to Calgary, and that's Cale Yarncroke.
Oh, okay, yeah. His name has definitely been picking up some steam lately. I wouldn't hate it.
Perfect fit, I think. Perfect dollar amount, perfect fit, and they're going to move him. I just see that one, and I'm like, oh, man, that fills this roster, and we are cocked and loaded for a run.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
We'll see. I'm usually wrong as hell on these, but we'll see here.
You're not the only one tooting that horn, though.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not the only one. What's your biggest fear as we go down the stretch here?
Biggest fear, I think, would be it's a tie between injuries and expectation. I feel like expectation... We've seen it happen to this team that it bogs them down and they don't live up to it.
I don't think that's happening this year. We got a different bench boss.
You got to just go with it.
Yeah.
Don't like if when you make the playoffs, like obviously you have to. It's a fine line of yes, this is the playoffs, but just keep doing what you were doing.
One day at a time, and I think Sutter is the master at doing that. But what I fear so much is. Like, I feel in every hockey season, you're rolling dice, right?
Yeah.
And we've come up with absolutely, and I need another piece of wood to be banging on it right now. We've had no injuries.
Yeah, that's... Yeah,
no
that's thing,
injuries.
Right?
When our biggest injury is Tyler Pitlick.
Yeah. you're good with that.
Right?
And that's...
Like, I am definitely afraid.
If you want to go for a specific on injuries, it's Jacob Markstrom for me. But I feel better, and this isn't, you know, a slight to, you know, Dave Riddick or anything like that, but I actually feel really good with having Vladar. If Markstrom were to go down, knock on wood, I feel like he could handle it for a little while.
Markstrom would be my biggest fear.
Yeah.
Lindholm would be my second biggest fear. Tanev would be my third.
Yeah.
We got to keep those three guys healthy, man.
Yeah, Tanev took a stick
in the face the other night.
Yeah, and then, I was like, oh shit.
And then Backlund got dinged the other night. I was like, oh no. And then Hanifin did too, and I'm like, oh shit, this is one of those nights.
We're just like toying with the IR.
Two more questions for you.
All right.
Will Gaudreau, Tkachuk, Mangiapane, and Shillington all be on the Flames roster next year?
If there's one thing that I can say confidently for Brad Treliving is that he manages to find a way with re-signing guys and contracts. I think he can do it.
I think it happens, but the only way it doesn't happen is out of Treliving's control, and that's if Gaudreau doesn't want to be here.
And I don't see that, honestly. This guy's just going. He's talked about potentially chasing a couple franchise records, stuff like
no,
that.
No, I hope that
he wants to do it here. He wants to do it here.
I hope you're right. I pray you're right, but I worry. I still worry. Because he's not going to say, wow, peace out. After this year, I'm checking out. Calgary was good to me. He's not going to say that. Now, do I think it's a better than 50% chance that he's in Calgary next year? Yeah, I do. I really do. But it does scare me a little bit, though.
Yeah. My thing is, okay, you see the roster that has been built now. It has taken maybe a little long to build. But you see the roster now. This is a team that can push. Do you want to give up the chance that you could win a cup to make a little bit more money?
I don't know.
Or
we'll find out
on what you play for.
But yeah. Here's my worry. Here's my worry. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
All right.
When the shit gets tough in the playoffs, who hides?
Gaudreau a little bit. I get the feeling we're not going to see that this year.
I pray you're right. And you know what? If we do see it this year, then I'm perfectly fine if he walks and we just take the cap space and get something else. I don't want that to happen. I want him to produce, us re-sign him, and we all go home happy.
Yeah.
But if he hides and runs in the playoffs like he's done in years past, people are going to scream, well, we lost him for nothing. No, we learned a lesson.
Yeah. And I'm... Yeah, I understand the devil's advocate side, but yeah, it's you're having a chance for that Silver Cup right now. You're playing with the best line in the NHL right now. You are part of the best line in the NHL right now. You're not, could you go somewhere and find good players to play with otherwise? Yeah, but are they going to be Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk right now? No.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yep. I'm with you. I hope he's back here. I just, I don't know. That's just a fear of mine. You mentioned something there. One thing I want to touch on. You mentioned it seems like it's taken a long time to build this.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that statement. And when you said it, I agreed with it. But then I thought in my head, look at how much it's changed since Sutter got here.
Yeah.
That's less than 12 months ago.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, that was, the Sutter hiring was something that I straight up just was not sure about.
I loved it.
This could either go, it could go like, it's complete opposite ends of the spectrum. This could be absolutely amazing and work out great, which has been so far. I'm like, or this could be, as a buddy of mine, James Johnson, likes to put it, Dino Darrell, and everything is 10 years outdated.
I was laying in bed sleeping. Listening to 960, I was just falling asleep after the Ottawa game.
It was so late.
It was late. And I was like going in and out of sleep, and then I hear Pat Steinberg say, breaking news, Jeff Ward has been let go. And I'm like, phew. Sat up in bed. I was like.
Yeah. And that was after a win also.
Yeah, a big win. And then he said, the replacement is Darryl Sutter. And I flew out of bed. And I remember messaging Audie, and we were both just like off the charts. And I'm like, yeah. I agree with you though. I did think the next morning when I came to and was like, okay, this wasn't a dream.
Yeah.
I was like, this is either going to go really good or a complete derailment where we tear down to the sticks.
Yeah. I'm still not sure if that specifically was a Brad move or if that was higher management.
I don't care.
But it's worked out well no matter what.
So far.
I want to throw one more guy. I don't know if the cap necessarily works, but we've also seen teams like Tampa Bay and currently looking like Vegas have some fun with the rules of the cap when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah.
What about a guy like Claude Giroux?
Too much money.
Too much, you think so?
I don't know how we'd work
even
that
with some, even with some cap fuckery?
Yeah, Brad for living over the coast of cap gymnastics. I'm not sure you can bend quite that far. And, you know, as much as I think he'd be fine, like, where do you even put him? Like, where do you, like, and I'm not trying to be, like, egotistical that we're that good. I'm just saying, like, where would you put him?
I would slot him. I'd slot him that second line if you're looking at center. Not that Backlund can't do it, but
so then where? So then Rizisca's just out then, because I've been super impressed with him.
Oh, I've been impressed with him too. It is that kind of balancing act like you were talking about. Unless he can play the right side as well.
But then
Trevor Lewis has been all right, but
then who are you gonna have on the fourth line?
That would be a Dubé, Rizika, Toffoli, if you were to just shuffle down.
Are we not wasting Toffoli down there when really your fourth line is just supposed to go out there and stop people from scoring?
Or you have a guy like Coleman, who's used to playing a bit who's used to playing a more of a role like that.
I'm just going to throw a wild one out because I do think Claude Giroux is a great guy. I hope that doesn't happen.
Giroux is just a bit of a wild one also. Like you said, it's going to be cap gymnastics. I'm looking at it right now, 8275. Like, that's going to be hard to do. But
yeah, especially after the Toffoli thing. And you know what? And honestly, and I'm not trying to – like, I have no information on this other than just, like, something in my gut telling me that I don't think Giroux is going to a Canadian team.
No, it's pretty – I think everybody's, 10-team no trade is Canadian cities.
Arizona.
Buffalo, Arizona, and there's one other I was thinking of. But like there's your nine.
I know.
Maybe Seattle. They would be able to handle the cap at least. But
oh, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I want as many good players on this team as we can get.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're sitting here in February talking about gearing up for a strong cup run.
Yeah.
Do you consider this team a cup contender?
I think so. I feel like it would be stupid not to.
Okay, I didn't up until just the last couple of days, and I didn't.
Yeah.
But then I started to think about it, and I thought, all right, who's better than them in the West? Colorado. And the next one that came to mind was Vegas. And then I thought maybe Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado, I went through it, and I'm like, Colorado's better.
Yeah.
Vegas, I looked at it on paper. I'm like, goaltending, I give us the nod. Defense, about a wash. Forwards, I know they have a bunch of injuries, but right now, it's about a wash, right?
Yeah. It's similar.
So if they're a contender, then we're a contender.
Yeah.
And absolutely. To me, Minnesota's that team that I don't know why. My gut just tells me to throw a little bit of money down in Vegas on this team. I can't believe I'm saying that because Minnesota, I freaking rip on them all the time for being the boringest, stupid hockey.
But they haven't been for the last couple of years. Yeah, Carter and I on the Quack Report, we used to make jokes of, oh, it's the Minnesota Mild. But they've been great this last year, and that's a team that's kind of – in desperation mode also because next year they get, what is it, like 10, 12 million taken off their cap pretty much because of those buyouts of Suter and Parise.
So it's kind of
this is a year for them too.
So. Kind of all in for them. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I'm just super happy that we're sitting here talking about positive. We're going on a big playoff run here. This is going to be great.
Yeah, there hasn't really been like a whole lot of negatives in this conversation, or even just on Twitter or anything like that. Like, it's, I would say at worst, everyone's just cautiously optimistic, but it feels like everyone's just having fun right now. That's the fans. That's the team itself, right? Like, you watch every post game interview, and these guys are smiling.
Yeah.
Right. Like, these guys are having fun, and obviously, when you're having fun, when you're winning, you're just gonna keep rolling. So
it's been fun, and geez, it's good to have these conversations in such a positive light. But appreciate you coming on the show. Maybe I can get you on for a trade deadline show, maybe, huh?
Sounds good.
Talk I'm about down. Having a see who else we get, because I think you're right. I think I don't think we're done yet. I think there's going to be some tweaking going on, and I'm okay with that. So It's been fun. It's always fun having you on the show. And, you know, we actually agreed a whole lot more today than we normally do.
We did. You know? We were talking about Johnny Gaudreau's contract.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what that is. I'm going to be sweating now that one out. So.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Oh, man. Well, great having you on the show. I appreciate it. And, yeah, let's talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me on, Brad.
Hey, hockey fans, check out the Debate Hockey Podcast. Host Brad Brood and Blake Friars debate all the happenings throughout the hockey world every single week on the Debate Hockey Podcast.
All right, Flames fans, time for a little bit of Flames news. Adam Rziska fined $2,004.17. Yeah, a little bit of a elbow on February 17th. Kevin, against the Anaheim Ducks game, which it came out late the next day, and I was a little surprised because I didn't see this one coming. It was an elbow to Anaheim Ducks defenseman Kevin Shattenkirk. And the later part of the first period, and a minor penalty was called. Anaheim was screaming for a high stick because it bloodied the nose of Shattenkirk. It was clearly an elbow. I thought a two-minute elbow. Very, very surprised to see it it carry over into a fine. But anyways, it wasn't a suspension, and I'm sorry. I like that aggressive play from him. I think Rziska has been really, really good this year, and I did hear this week that they've kind of given him the go-ahead to find a home in Calgary. So I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. Now, the Sutter system, we've talked about it a bazillion times this year, and how well it's going and how this team is responding to this Sutter system and how playing with the lead is such a big part of it and how well Calgary has done with that. Calgary has played. I saw Pat Steinberg put a tweet out, so I'm not stealing these stats from anybody without giving him credit, and Pat does a freaking great job. I listen to him every single day. But Calgary has played 600 minutes, 29 seconds during this 10-game win streak, or just over 30 periods of hockey. They've trailed a grand total of 37.25 minutes. That's 6.2% of the time. They've held a lead 311 minutes, 27 seconds, which is 51.9% of the time. That's a pretty solid winning formula. And then when you look at this, too, as it came out this week, that assistant coach Ryan Huska, well, Sutter was always been preaching for the last couple weeks, we need to get more shots from the defenseman, we need to get more shots from the defenseman. We've heard that how many times? Ryan Huska announced this week that lately they've been writing down the amount of shots each defenseman is getting in a game and putting it on flashcards and putting them in their stalls at the end of the night. That way everyone could see each other's totals and made it kind of a competition out of it. Interesting strategy. Sounds like something you'd do in Pee Wees. But look at the point production we're getting from our defensemen now and how important that's been to this Flames winning streak. It's been huge. And if it takes doing that, man, it sounds like a pretty damn good idea, doesn't it? Michael Backlund reached a milestone this week, 792 games played. That's fifth most in Flames franchise history. Lindholm with a great honor this week as he gets number one star of the week last week from February 14th to the 20th. In that time frame, Lindholm had 4 goals, 4 assists, 8 points in 3 games. Is this guy starting to get the recognition that he deserves? And don't forget this, Flames fans. The week prior to that, Jacob Markstrom was the number one star in the NHL. 2 weeks in a row, Flames number one stars. Has that ever happened? Do you ever remember that? I don't. 8-game goal streak for Elias Lindholm as he was able to pot that one with 43 seconds to go in the Winnipeg game. That puts him in a tie for the franchise record with Kent Nielsen and Gary Roberts, some pretty damn good company there. If he scores on Thursday night against Vancouver, that's a record. Speaking of win streaks and records, the Flames tied another record with the win over the Winnipeg Jets. They have the longest winning streak in franchise history, which ties the 1978-79 team in Atlanta that won 10 straight and the 2016-17 season that won 10 straight. I remember that pretty clearly. Now, they can break that record on Thursday night against the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see if that happens. The Vancouver Canucks are an interesting team when the Flames play them because it's always tight checking, and it's a, I consider one of those, you know, those rivalry games, and those games breed difficult situations, and probably situations that Sutter absolutely loves because it's more playoff hockey. Be interesting to see how that all pans out. Let's head on over to the Pacific Division, and let's take a look at how things are going in the division and, you know, where this Flames team is at. Let's talk about Oilers first. As the Oilers were on a four-game win streak. They was snapped by the Minnesota Wild, a 7-3 loss, at least a 7-3 loss, where four of the first seven shots went into the net over on Mike Smith. That's not good. That's not good at all. The goaltending problems are back in Edmonton, which doesn't break my heart. But I still think this Edmonton team is a pretty damn solid hockey team and a team that can scare us and a team that I think is going to make the playoffs. Now, do I think we're going to play them in the first round? I don't know because I do think this Flames team is capable of winning the division and staying ahead of Vegas. But if they falter at all, it looks like a date with Edmonton probably. Now, the Vancouver Canucks lost on Saturday to the Anaheim Ducks. 7-4 may just be the backbreaker. They put some 7 points back as of Sunday and would have to jump three teams for that final wildcard spot. My gut tells me that it's going to be time in Vancouver for them to start shipping some players out and making some drastic moves. Now let's run through the Pacific Division real quickly. As Calgary holds a top spot, and we're not counting on point percentage anymore, we're going on straight points with 66 points in 49 games. Playing two games more, Vegas is at 62 points. So the Flames have a four-point lead. Pretty impressive for a team that, you know, was down a fairly decent margin not too long ago. Edmonton holds that third spot, 59 points, with a tie with L.A., 59 points for them also. It's tight. Anaheim is also currently sitting at 59 points, but has played three games more. Vancouver, 54 points, sits in sixth spot. San Jose has dropped down to 50 points in seventh. And the Seattle Kraken bringing up the rear at 36 points in 53 games. Calgary a plus 55. Wow. That is flat out amazing, and I don't even know. It's so impressive that and fun to watch. The battle with Vegas is going to be really big down the stretch. We'll see how Jack Eichel does now that he's back in the lineup, what extra dynamics that brings to the game. But it's going to be a battle in the Pacific.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
Time to preview this week's hockey action for the Flames, and it starts Thursday night, the 24th of February, as Calgary goes on the road of something we haven't done in quite some time, and they visit the Vancouver Canucks. We talked about it earlier about how big of a rivalry that is, and Vancouver currently sits in sixth place, 54 points. Second of four meetings between the two teams. Calgary did win the first meeting back on January 29th. We just talked about that one. A 1-0 hard-fought game. This series wraps up on March 19th in Vancouver, with two more games, the 19th of March in Vancouver and the 23rd of April in Calgary. Three more games against this team that we really don't know what we're going to see. Will they be in full teardown mode, or will they be pushing for that final spot? It'll be interesting to see where that goes. Now, this weekend, Hockey Night in Canada, the Minnesota Wild come to the Saddle Dome, and the Flames come back for one at home and then go back out on the road. They have a back-to-back situation with Minnesota where they're here Saturday night. Calgary goes down to Minnesota Tuesday, the 1st of March. And this is games 1 and 2 of a three-game set. The first matchup of the year will come Saturday night. And Minnesota, who's a good hockey team, They are currently ranked second in the Central and are having a great season. And one of those teams I kind of earmark as kind of one of the teams that I consider a contender, maybe. They're kind of where Calgary's sitting. It's like it's hard to consider them a contender because we haven't seen much playoff success. But what we're seeing in the regular season leads me to believe that this team is fully capable of putting it together and having some success. So that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But big game Thursday night with the Vancouver Canucks, the Flames on the road, trying to get this win streak up to 11. Did you guys think we'd be saying that? Because I did not. Schedule heats up after a light week. Only two games this week. Next week it's back to the Fast and Furious as we get rolling towards NHL trade deadline and the Stanley Cup playoffs. Get on over to FlamesUnfiltered.com. Check out all the back episodes and all the other Flames news we got on that webpage. Check that out. Get on over to YouTube. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group. That's where you can watch all the episodes of this. It's a good time to be a Flames fan, isn't it? Yeah, we're back next Wednesday night with another big episode of the show. Good luck this week, Flames. Have a great week, Flames fans, and enjoy the games.
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter, at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page, at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter, at Brad Brood. And if you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Thanks again, and enjoy the hockey action.
Play on! Yeah, baby! Play on! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.